Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Buddy, welcome here to another live edition of Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market update. This is Peter Schiff. You're president of Euro Pacific Capital. I'm the host for the next hour for this call-in program. And please, your calls are welcome. The toll-free number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. The lines are open. Anyway, a lot to talk about again today. A lot's been happening, continuing. We had oil prices moving up above $61 a barrel before pulling back a couple of bucks in the last few days, back down to about 58. But yet another new high in the ever-increasing price of crude oil. And again, it is my forecast that it continues to rise. When I first began this radio program about 10 months ago, we were still below $40 a barrel, and we've risen 50%, and I see no end to this rise. And again, a lot of it is a function of the weak dollar. Although recently it's been a function of the weak euro. But oil prices are going to continue to rise, I think, and we continue to recommend those investments. Also this week we saw the continued surge in the price of gold stocks. Now I've been talking on this program for many weeks now about the gold market and about gold stocks. And again, the XAU index was up today another almost 4% on the day. We're now at the highest price we've been in the XAU since March 23rd, my birthday, of 2005. So over a three-month high. And the XAU has now risen since its lows in last month, since last month's low, in the last month and a half, we've risen from 78 to almost 95. That's a gain in percentage terms of 22% in the value of gold stocks since their lows last month. That is a very significant rise. And I think the next stop technically on the XAU is going to be to fill a gap up around 100 to 102. And I think they're looking very strong. And again, we're seeing the strength in gold and gold stocks at a time of relative dollar stability. Its weakness in currencies like the euro and now the Japanese yen. The Japanese yen has weakened quite a bit. It hit a new multi-month low today. Gold prices are surging in terms of the Japanese yen right now, and you've got gold prices going up dramatically in yen terms, dramatically in euro terms, and it's rising in dollar terms as well. I mean, gold was up another $2 today. So you've got people all around the world that are going to look to seek safety from politicians and the printing press in gold. Now, that doesn't mean that our foreign investments in other currencies need to be jettisoned in favor of gold. I think gold is going to be rising against all currencies, but I think it will rise particularly against the dollar. Because remember, if we get the world rebelling against paper currency, the currency that is held in the most abundance by the numbers of people around the world is the U.S. dollar. We are the country and we are the currency that has the most to lose from a fear of currency of paper assets. Because remember, the reason that the U.S. economy is viable today, and it's not really viable, I mean, the reason it's able to get, we're able to get by, is because we're able to exchange our currency for real goods. We're not trading, exchanging goods for goods like every other country in the world, really. We're exchanging paper money that we print for goods other people produce. So it's very important that there be confidence in paper money around the world because we are spending so much of it. And if there is a loss of confidence in paper money in general, Americans will suffer the most because we are the most dependent on the world's confidence in our currency. And since we have this enormous current account liability and we're such a huge net debtor nation and we have so much leverage in the economy, one of the ways that you make up for a loss of confidence in paper money is interest rates rise, because people need to be compensated with a higher rate of interest to offset the risks of holding paper currency. And the country that is economy is going to be most hurt by higher interest rates is America, because we're the ones that have to pay the most interest. We're net debtors, and we have a lot of borrowing at very short-term rates. So, you know, if this is really going on, and certainly the price action in gold and gold mining stocks and other commodities indicate that the world is becoming more and more skeptical of paper currency, the currency that is in the most danger is the U.S. dollar, which is why we recommend that that investors, particularly investors who look upon themselves as being conservative and who properly understand that the operative word in conservative is conserve, and what we're trying to conserve, therefore, is purchasing power. And you're not simply trying to conserve the quantity of dollars in your checking account. I mean, that doesn't mean anything if you need, you know, a substantial quantity of them to buy something. What we want to conserve is what our money will buy, and I don't believe anybody can do that in the U.S. dollar. I think you can only do that in a conservative portfolio of non-dollar assets, which is what we're recommending. And, you know, we can talk to people about that individually, of course, if they want to call up our offices and speak, you know, speak to one of our representatives. The number to call toll-free is 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922, to discuss this strategy and find out if these investments are appropriate or suitable for your particular situation. Anyway, I also want to talk quite a bit in this hour about two particular spectacles that I happened to witness on television. One of them was a congressional hearing where both Alan Greenspan and Secretary Jon Snow were fielding questions from irate politicians, basically playing to the television audience to win votes, trying to criticize these two gentlemen and urge them to, you know, get tough on China. What are we going to do to get tough on China? China's not playing fair. And a lot of their animosity towards China has to do with the recent bid by a Chinese government-controlled oil company to buy out Conoco. It's about a $20 billion deal. And the politicians are looking at this as a strategic reserve, this is an energy reserve, and how dare the Chinese buy one of our companies, and this is outrageous, and this, how do we stop this, and, you know. And this is just absolutely ridiculous, because, I mean, to look at these politicians, you know, trying to get tough with China and not realizing, I mean, talk about biting the hand that feeds you. I mean, I wrote a column on this. It's on my website. You can read it. It's the most recent commentary. It's called Theater of the Absurd, and it's on my website at www.europac.net. I mean, talk about right out of Alice in Wonderland. I mean, here are these congressmen, you know, talking about how are we going to get tough on China, when China is, you know, single-handedly almost subsidizing the entire economy. In fact, the very budget deficits that these spendthrift politicians are voting to produce are being financed by the Chinese. Yet the politicians are talking about how we got to punish these guys and how they're not playing fair and how we got to get tough with them. I mean, it's the Chinese that need to get tough with Americans. I mean, if they want to know the truth. All right? I mean, the Chinese need to stop financing these deficits. The Chinese need to stop lending us all this money. It's China that needs to get tough on America instead of just being a wishy-washy wimp and just subsidizing everything that we want to do, because it's hurting the Chinese and allowing Americans to live high, you know, on their hog, or, you know, live off the fruits of their labor. I mean, this was a ridiculous spectacle to behold. And if anybody happened to witness that, I mean, it'd be a good topic to call in, or, you know, I didn't get to see the whole thing. I was working, of course, so I didn't get to catch every stupid comment that was made. But if anybody else was watching that and they want to talk about it, it'd be something to, you know, a good a good topic to call in on. And in any event, the number to call the program is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597 to talk about it. Also, if any of you happen to catch Jon Snow was the guest host on CNBC Squawk Box yesterday. The guest host on the show for 3 hours. He sat there for 3 hours, being a guest host. And you know, this is probably one of the worst displays of outright propaganda I've seen. And I don't know if anybody else again had a chance to watch this. I'm sure many of you did. I mean, it was unbelievable. The performance that this guy put on, and the fact that CNBC has him on there, I mean, yeah, it's great to have the Secretary of the Treasury to show up on your show as a guest. I mean, it's a great coup. But basically what they did is they provided him with the opportunity to inundate the airways with propaganda. And they lobbed a few softballs at him. I would have loved to have been in there. In fact, they even had Bill Gross on the phone, who's smart enough to have asked him some tough questions. But he threw him some softballs. But this guy basically went on television and just lied. He just, one lie after another about how great the economy is. I mean, everything is perfect as far as this guy's concerned. And some of the more outrageous statements that he made, you know, and we'll talk about them now. And again, if anybody saw this, you know, I mean, they want to back me up on this, or they want to talk about, because again, I didn't see the whole thing. I usually keep the volume on low or on mute when I have the program on, because I don't want to hear all this nonsense all day long. I mean, I've got important things to do. I'm trying to help save people their money. I don't need to hear all this propaganda. But you know, I turn the volume up and down. But the phone number is 888. 678-9597 if you saw this CNBC program and you want to add to what I'm talking about here. But one of the first things that, you know, one of the guys on, I think it might have been Sleesman, the economist, who's pretty good, and asked him a question about the Chinese, you know, lending us all this money, buying all these treasuries. And he asked the secretary, should we be concerned by the amount of bonds that they're buying? And does this give them some leverage over us, or some? Are we ceding some autonomy that we owe the Chinese so much money? Is this a problem that we should be worried about? Now, an honest answer should be: of course, we should worry about it. Of course, we should worry about the fact that we're going deeply into debt. You know, particularly to a country that we may not regard as an ally, right? I mean, if we regard them as an adversary, you know, I mean, we should certainly be worried about going deeper and deeper into debt to the rest of the world, particularly China. But what did the congressman say? I mean, the secretary say? He said, no, I'm not worried at all. Not in the least bit. I'm not concerned in one bit. There's nothing wrong with our going into debt. Now, I mean, just think about the sheer lunacy of the statement. To say I'm not worried about it at all, it's not a problem. I mean, he should have at least said, yes, we're concerned about it, and we're going to try to do something about it. We're going to try to turn the situation around. We're going to get rid of the budget deficit. We're going to try to pay off that debt. Yes, it's a problem, but we can deal with it. Instead, he says, oh, it's not even a problem at all. We're not concerned. We're not in the least bit concerned. There's nothing wrong with going deep into debt to consume. I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, what the Chinese should be doing is thinking, are these guys insane? I mean, because if we're saying it's not even a problem, then obviously we're not going to do anything about it. We're just going to keep going deeper and deeper into debt, which means that to the Chinese, they're never going to get their money back. Because if we just go deeper into debt forever, that means that eventually we go broke or we default. Because you can't go into debt forever. You have to have some plan to pay off your debt. And so if you're of the opinion that it doesn't matter how much debt you take on, that it's never a problem, well, I mean, then you're never going to be able to pay it back. And that's sending a very tough, terrible message to the people lending us the money, that these guys don't even care. That these guys don't care that they're going into debt. They're not going to do anything about it. And even what's more absurd than the fact that Jon Snow said that he's not worried about us going into debt to the rest of the world or the Chinese, when Leesman asked him, well, I mean, what if they decide to sell, or don't we have to worry about it? And with a very smug, I mean, almost chuckle or a very smug look, what he said is that, no, We're never going to have to worry about that. They're never going to sell. The Chinese know that we've got the greatest economy in the world. We've got the best investments in the retail world, which, of course, is all a bunch of nonsense. But he said, so they would never sell. And besides, if they ever decided to do something rash, it would hurt them more than it would hurt us. Therefore, they're never going to do it. And this goes back to the thing, the philosophy that we owe the Chinese so much money, and they're so dependent on lending us money to buy their products, that if they stop doing it and plunge the U.S. economy into a recession and bursted our housing market and threw a lot of Americans out of work, that it would be even worse for them, because now they wouldn't be able to sell us any products because we would be too broke to afford them. Now, first of all, that's all nonsense. But second of all, it's not worse for them. It's worse for us. We're the ones that will be too broke to afford their products. So what they end up doing is consuming the products themselves. See, when we go broke, China still has their products. So instead of sending them here, they get to enjoy them themselves. What's wrong with that? They do without our paper money, which is no good anyway. But we have to go without their products, which is what we need. I mean, so, but this whole idea that it's mutually assured destruction, that China's not going to launch its missiles because we're going to launch our missiles back. What's our missile back? We go broke, right? It's like we're going to be so poor that you're not going to be able to sell stuff to it. That's our defense. That's our mutual destruction. Don't stop buying our bonds because we'll be too broke to buy your products. This is supposed to deter them. I mean, it's like, don't shoot me because I'll commit suicide. I mean, that's really what we're coming back. This whole thing is nonsense. But he was like, saying, they would never do it because they'll hurt us more. It'll hurt them more than they hurt us. That's how arrogant these guys are. And again, if the Chinese were actually watching CNBC and listening to this, I mean, they should want to stop subsidizing us right then and there. If we actually think, because if the Chinese actually believed that we believed that, you would think they would want to stop lending us money. Because basically what we're telling them is, we owe you so much money that you have no choice but to lend us more. And we're never going to pay you back. But you can't do anything about it because you have to keep lending us more and more money forever and ever and ever. You're never going to get a dime of it back. But you got to keep doing it. This is what we think. And, you know, what's going on right now, and again, bringing back to this Conoco, you know, we're objecting to the Chinese buying Conoco. Well, I mean, they have a right to buy it, right? I mean, they have a huge trade surplus with us. Why are we supposed to object when they want to take some of the money that they're earning selling us products and do something with it other than buying U.S. treasuries, other than just loaning it back to us at a low rate of interest? You know, the whole nonsense is, and my point, you got to read that article on my website. But this whole Conoco deal is about, $20 billion, whatever it is. There have been two other deals. There's another announced hire, Chinese company, Hire Group, has made a bid for a Maytag. Small, but I got $1.5 billion deal for Maytag. And, you know, a month or two ago, Lenovo, which is a big Chinese computer company, a lot of our clients own it. It used to be called Legend Computers. We've been buying that stock for years. It's the number one PC maker in China. It trades in Hong Kong. Anyway, they announced that they were going to buy the personal computer division, the PC division, for IBM. So these are pretty high-profile acquisitions, you know, IBM PC division, Maytag, and now Conoco. But you add those three deals up together, and again, it's, you know, a little over, you know, $25 billion. Our current account deficit this year, 2005, is probably going to come in at around $800 billion. $800 billion current account deficit in 1 year. And these three deals are only about $25 billion. I mean, what is that? 25 divided by 800. That's only 3% of our trade deficit, current account deficit, for 1 year. Now, to put $800 billion into perspective, politicians are complaining about a deal for Conoco or a little deal for Lenovo or Maytag. There are 15 Dow Jones stocks, 15 stocks, that if you added up their combined market cap, it would equal $800 billion. And I'm gonna read off this list of stocks so you have an idea. This is what $800 billion is. $800 billion is equal to the combined market cap of Alcoa, American Express, Boeing, Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, DuPont, General Motors, Hewlett-Packard, Home Depot, Honeywell, 3M, McDonald's, Merck, SBC Communications, and Walt Disney. That's half of the Dow Jones. The market cap of those 15 stocks is equal to 1 year of our current account deficit. So if politicians are making a big deal about foreigners trying to buy $20 billion worth of stuff, imagine when they really start spending their dollars. I mean, right now they're content to loan us back this money at a low rate of interest in government bonds and finance our housing bubble. I mean, that's what they own now. If you want to know who owns all the mortgages on all these $800,000 two-bedroom condos down there in Miami Beach or San Diego, it's the Chinese and the Japanese. But when they get tired of holding all this debt because they realize we can't service it, or they're not going to get paid back in real purchasing power because they're worried about the dollar, they're going to rush to turn these claims into real stuff. And remember, this is only 1 year's current account deficit. That basically means to finance 1 year of buying imported computers and taking vacations and buying cars and furniture and appliances and toys, just 1 year of consumption, of excess consumption. And we basically, just squandered the equivalent of half of the Dow Jones 30 Industrial Average in 1 year. And now what does that mean? That means that all the profits that those 15 companies could make from now until the end of time wouldn't belong to Americans. They belong to somebody else. We are blowing so much money, and the fact that Alan Greenspan and Jon Snow and all these Nobel laureates in economics that sit on the Council of Economic Advisors can be sitting by and watching a nation squander hundreds of years of accumulated wealth on the biggest spending binge in world history is amazing. They can sit by and actually think that here we are spending ourselves into oblivion, and they talk about how we got a great economy. I mean, this is absolute nonsense. Anyway, I know we got a call on the line. Let me pause and take a quick break to play the message from Euro Pacific Capital. We'll be back to pick up your phone calls at the other end of the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. It's Peter Schiff at Euro Pacific Capital, and I'm taking your calls toll-free. The number to call is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. And let's take a call from Steve up in Toronto.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Good, how are you?
Oh, not bad. One thing on the yesterday, I did see the snow and growth talking away there, and they did a poll on their website at who do you believe or who do you think is right? And the last I saw was running 70% gross, 30% snow. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The people were kind of maybe siding with Bill Gross on that that aspect. But he also mentioned about wage growth, and I wasn't 100% sure what he meant about that.
What do you mean?
Well, you're saying that'll fuel the economy is going to be wage growth.
Well, I mean, they're hoping there's going to be wage growth, but I don't see where it's going to come from. I mean, if we keep laying people off and we keep shutting down factories, where are we going to get the wage growth?
That's what my thinking was.
It's not like, see, the problem is if we're spending all of our money on imports.
Right.
That money is creating jobs in China or Japan. It's not creating jobs here.
Yeah, understood, yes.
The way people are getting income in the United States is not because they're earning it. They're getting spent. They're getting it because they're borrowing it.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going into debt. So all of our consumption is debt financed. You know, it's not we're not consuming what we produce. We're not creating wealth. We're just dissipating it.
Right.
And the politicians look at the value of our houses as going up and say we're creating wealth. We're not creating anything.
Yeah, and talking about the value of houses, like I've heard this. Maybe you've mentioned it in a couple places, but I'm not quite sure. Is it the case down there when you go to get a mortgage on a house or something like that? They're not really entitled to ask you exactly to prove what your income is.
Well, it depends on. I mean, this is part of the nonsense, and I'll it's a good topic to talk about because one of the other crazy things that Jon Snow said was somebody asked him, and you might have saw this. Somebody asked him, "Are you nervous about the housing bubble or a potential housing bubble?"
Right.
He said, no, I'm not worried about it. He goes, there is no housing bubble. He said, houses aren't stocks. They're not gold bullion or pork bellies. He goes, you can't have a bubble in houses, which, I mean, obviously the guy is a complete, you know, clueless if he believes that. He said, people are buying houses because they're good investments. Okay, so it's not, I mean, he said, people are buying houses because it's the best thing you can do. There's nothing better than buying your own house as a good investment. He kept on going for all these reasons. Why, you know, you could have substituted the word stocks. You know, if someone would have asked him, is there a stock market bubble in 2000? He would have said, well, stocks are not pork bellies or gold bullion. You can't have a bubble in stocks. I mean, people are buying stocks because they're good investments. Because for the long term, I mean, you could have substituted. This guy was just trying to deny. Again, if he was being honest, he would have said, sure, of course I'm worried about a potential housing bubble. Instead, he said, no, I'm not worried at all because you can't have a bubble in houses. I mean, talk about denial. But if you go on your question with loans, what you can have, there are two types of loans really. You can have a documented loan or a no doc loan. A documented loan is where you actually substantiate what you claim your income to be and your employment to be.
Right.
If you have a documented loan, you're going to get a lower rate of interest than if you go for one of these no doc mortgages. The no doc mortgage means you just tell the lender what you make and they accept it. They don't ask you to verify it. Now, in exchange for that, you have to pay a higher rate of interest, but the whole thing is it's ridiculous because you shouldn't even be able to borrow money if you can't prove your income.
Yeah, I know. Like I just wondering because up here I co-signed a loan for my nephew for $4,000. I had to show my income statements for 3 years. You know, I could have given him the $4,000, but I thought it was important that he get a credit rating, you know.
Because that was probably a loan that the bank was going to keep on its books.
Yeah.
See, here's the real problem. That what's really feeding the real estate bubble, apart from people's unbridled speculation, is the willingness of the financial community to finance it. And so back in the olden days, you know, like 10 years ago, whatever, banks expected to get repaid. Basically, when somebody issued a mortgage, they expected to get repaid, which meant that the person who they were lending the money to had to earn enough money to pay all the mortgage payments, to pay all the interest and all the principal, so that at the end of the 30 years, whatever money the bank lent, it was all repaid plus interest. They don't care about that anymore. Today, the issuers of credit couldn't care less if the person they're lending to could ever repay the loan, because they're not going to keep it on their books. All they care about is can you make the current interest payment? Because obviously if someone's going to buy a house interest only, and all they can do is barely make the interest only payments, they can never pay off the principal. I mean, why would you lend somebody money who has no way of ever paying off the principal? I mean, this is what's so insane. And the fact is that when banks were expected to get paid back, they wanted proof, verification of income, verification of employment. They wanted to make sure that you can make these payments. Since today no one cares, they're willing to accept your word for it. They're willing to lend you whatever amount of money you want to borrow, as long as you're willing to state that you have the earnings. Now, if you dangle, and here's the other thing, the banks will let you buy, or not the banks, the lenders, they will let you buy a condo or a house with nothing down, zero, right?
Yeah.
It means you're risking nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they will say, look, you can buy this $600,000-$700,000 condo. You don't have to put anything down. And you know what? We'll let you finance the payments interest only, adjustable rate, where your monthly payments for the first year or two are next to nothing. This is, I mean, this is too tempting for somebody to pass up, because the idea is you've got all the upside. I mean, if you pick up, if you look at a condo that's worth $500,000 and everybody expects it's going to go up 20% this year, that means whoever can get a bank to lend them the money, they're going to make $100,000 that year risk-free, because they've got nothing to lose, because they're putting nothing down. You know, part of the problem is when I read articles about how risky it is to have a nothing down interest-only mortgage.
Yeah.
It's not risky for the borrower.
No. What do they, they just take the thing off them, I guess.
Media keeps looking like, well, the borrowers are taking risk. No, they're not. They're taking no risk. They've got a no-lose situation. Basically, you have all these middle-class Americans that are having a tough time making ends meet, and a mortgage company is coming up to them and say, hey, I'll lend you all the money you need to buy that $600,000 or $700,000 house. You don't have to make any down payments. You don't even have to, you don't have to prove any of your income. And if you own that house, hell, you'll make $100,000 or $200,000 this year just on appreciation.
Yeah.
It's a no-lose situation. So this thing is going to end badly. I mean, people are buying houses because they think they're money machines.
Yeah, no, I agree. When it ends, it's going to end very badly. And usually, if I remember back, and I just can't remember how far back it was, when the top of the real estate came, it was when the condo market got big. They started building condos, and the condo companies were listing on the exchange up here, and, afterwards they were gone. They were finished. They were bankrupt. You know, so that's usually that's one big sign, is when it gets down to condos, and everybody's flipping condos.
You've got this website now, condoflip.com.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if somebody wants to say there's no real estate bubble, and these are buy and sell your pre-construction condos here. I mean, condos are changing hands down in Florida two or three times before they're even built.
Yeah. True.
Something like, people say that it's something like 20% or 15 or 20% of all the houses bought now are being bought for investment purposes, and another 20% are being bought as second homes, which means they're probably bought for investment purposes. But even the houses that are being bought by people who are intending to occupy them, mm-hmm. I think are being bought for investment or speculative purposes. Because, like in California, something like 90% of the people are using ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages.
Right.
They're doing that is because they only plan on living in the house for 2 to 3 years, which means they're speculating. Just because they're occupying their speculation doesn't mean they're not a speculator. But the statistics don't count you as buying it for an investment if you buy it to live in it. Mm-hmm. If you buy it to live in it with the intention of selling it in 2 or 3 years specifically, then you're gambling. You're speculating. You're not buying it to own it and pay off the mortgage. I think anybody who's buying a house with a timer who only plans on living in that house for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years is by definition a speculator.
Right.
If they didn't expect the price to go up, they would be renting.
Mm-hmm.
You're only supposed to buy a house if you're intending to live in it and pay off the mortgage. That's the place you're going to live. If you're not sure, if you're a transient, if you're going to be in town for a year or two, you're not really sure, and you're buying a house, you're purely buying it because of the gamble that the price is going to go up. Because if you don't think the price is going to go up and you think you're going to sell it in a couple of years, it doesn't make any sense because the transaction costs will kill you.
Yeah, well.
It's going to go up.
Yeah, it was the old style. You bought your house, you live to pay it off, and once you got to pay it off, you accomplish something. But I guess, that's not.
But anyway, thanks for the call. And the Canadians for a long time have been looking down at Americans. We've been in better shape. And I think in the next few years, you're going to find that we're going to be your poor neighbors to the south.
Well, the problem is if when it all happens, it's going to affect us too. And in some ways, maybe we're better off.
And that's one of the reasons that we're still working with Canadians, helping Canadians to get their money to New Zealand or Australia or Hong Kong or the Singapore, so that they're not everything in Canada. Because yes, I mean, Canada is too close for comfort to the United States.
And but I just want to leave you with one comment. It's kind of ridiculous having snow and gross kind of debating each other, because one guy, if Snow had ever agreed with him, what would have happened? if he'd ever said, oh yeah, I agree with you, we're going to go into recession.
On there with Jon Snow, but I mean, if they put me in there, Jon Snow would never come back.
Yeah, I don't think there would be a bid on the board, would there? I think things would have been disappearing in there in a hurry. But anyways, it was nice talking to you. I enjoyed listening to you. And keep
tell your friends, spread the word up there in Canada that people can start listening to the show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your articles are getting to be well known here. Your articles all over, like people are starting, even the Magambo Guru's quoting you now.
He's been quoting me for a while. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he writes a beautiful column. I just love watching him. Wednesdays is listen to the show and read the Magambo. Okay, take care, Peter.
And I know I got another caller on the line. I got Bob on the line from Great Neck, New York.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Good, good. How are you, Bob?
Thank you so much for the show. You give me an education every week, and I'm somebody who reads 5 hours a day, and I still don't know as much as you, although I'm trying to catch up. Quickly. I have two questions. One has to do with a report in today's Australasian Investment Review, and I know absolutely nothing about calls and options. And it says here that Dennis Gartman, who's a guru, said that there was a long call option trade that is large enough to change the course of trade for the precious metals. The report states that the size of the option trade, which is believed to be a long call position with a strike at U.S. $450 an ounce, is so large that that will serve as a, quote, siren call, end quote, for gold over the next several weeks. What the heck are they talking about?
Say that again. I've lost you there.
Okay. The report states that the size of the option trade,
right,
which is believed to be a long call position with a strike at U.S. $450 an ounce,
right,
is so large that that will serve as a siren call for gold over the next several weeks.
They mean there's a large there are a lot of calls that people are long at 450.
Uh huh.
Well, number one, I mean, when are they expiring?
It's so large it will serve as a siren.
No, but what was the month? Does it say when they think these calls are expiring, or?
Nope. No, it's if you look at for example goldinfo.com.
Because right now gold is under 450. I mean, so the calls the right to buy gold at 450 right now is worth nothing other than the time value. So it depends on when they mature. But I would say if the price of gold were to run through 450. Up to 475, 500. And if that's true, that there are a lot of calls for 450 strike, then what happens is that would put tremendous upward pressure on the price of gold, because what would happen is the owners of those call options could exercise them and look to buy gold from the person who shorted those options at 450, which means the people who wrote those calls who have no gold have to go into the market and buy a bunch of gold to deliver it to the exerciser of the option at 450. And obviously, if gold is at 500, they're going to have to buy it at 500 and sell it at a $50 loss. But if you have tremendous demand by people who have been exercised on, who are short calls, yes, that can create tremendous demand. And if the longs realize that the shorts are in trouble, it could be a squeeze. I mean, they could really push the price knowing that there are all these people that have to buy to make good on their commitments. So, yes, if we have a lot of calls, but that might be a reason to believe that the central bankers around the world and the big, the money banks will try to keep gold below that level at all costs to keep those options from getting into money.
I see.
You know, because as long as gold is below 450, no one's going to exercise a 450 call. So the people who shorted it don't have to worry about anything. It's when these options go into money that all of a sudden the person who's on the other side of the trade. Well, look, I would say that over the long term, one of the most foolish things you could do is write calls on gold, because gold is going to go up. I mean, I can't see how it doesn't go up, because I can't see how the dollar or other paper currencies don't go down. In fact, one of the things, I don't know if you're looking at these statistics, but money supply growth, M1, M2, M3, Greenspan has got the pedal to the metal right now. We're getting almost near double-digit growth rate in the money supply. And, you know, it's very ironic because here's Alan Greenspan trying to figure out, hey, what's this conundrum? Why are long-term rates not rising? Well, one of the reasons is because the Fed itself is buying so many long-term bonds. Because if they're increasing the money supply so dramatically, the way they do that is they go into the market and buy bonds and they print money. And that's what they're doing. You know, if you look at also what's going on, all this new money is going through the hedge fund community because the biggest buyers of new government bonds are the Bahamas and the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, they call them the Caribbean pirates.
I mean, and I don't even know if these are shill accounts for the Fed, you know, or if these are just legitimate speculators, but this is all hot money. I mean, you know, instead of even asking Jon Snow, are you worried about China buying these bonds, they should say, are you worried about these hedge funds buying all these bonds on leverage? Because these hedge funds aren't buying these bonds to clip those coupons.
Let me ask you this. Every time I can remember, certainly in recent history, whenever the Fed has its meeting, every time, I would say, at least the last seven times, gold has gone down on the day that the Fed meets. Do you think gold will go down tomorrow? I know it's hard to say, but what do you think?
I think gold's going up. I think the chart looks good. You know, like I said, I've been talking about the fact that I think gold has bottomed out, and I think, you know, we've broken out. We're holding above 360 euros, which has been a key level. You know, 350 was the key overhead resistance, and we're trading above 360. The breakout against the Japanese yen is very impressive. We have a breakout to 14-year highs or so against the British pound and the Swiss franc. Gold looks strong, and it's not just a function of Americans now. This is the whole world that's watching gold rise relative to their currency. So this is the first time in years that gold's been in a bull market now. I mean, the dollar was in a bear market for the past few years. That's why gold prices were rising in terms of dollars, but they weren't rising in terms of other currencies.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak to a broker with a brain because in the past, broker with a brain has been an oxymoronic phrase. And you're a pleasant reprieve from all that. I wish I would have met you about 20 years ago. But your company is fantastic. In fact, your broker, Paul Baiocchi, who I do business with, is one of the most erudite young men I have ever met. He's a pleasure to talk to. He's bright. He's open-minded. He's always thinking. He's not just an order taker, which most of these moron stockbrokers, and moron stockbroker is a redundant phrase. Most of these moron stockbrokers are simply order takers. They know absolutely nothing. And I don't think their mind has actually thought anything in the last.
In many cases, they're worse than that because they actually encourage people to do the wrong thing. They buy into the propaganda that their firms are filling their heads with.
Yeah,
actually, in many cases, they talk people out of what would be common sense.
Well, I can't encourage your listeners to your show enough to start doing business with you because you're the only guy who not only is putting people into good investments, but you're also educating people, which is also a very important thing. So like Cy Sims, you have an educated consumer.
That's the whole idea. I mean, our whole philosophy right now is to help educate people that there's a problem because a lot of people don't understand that there's a problem. And then there are other people who understand that there's a problem but don't know what to do about it, don't know how to protect themselves. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, you know, convince people or educate people to understand that there's a problem. And then once they understand it, now present them with a solution, at least to protect themselves. Because understand there's a problem isn't good enough if you don't do anything about it. I mean, what good is it to know that this disaster is going to happen if you don't take the steps necessary to protect yourself?
Unfortunately, most Americans are turkeys in July. And just like a turkey, they have absolutely no clue as to their prospective fate come November.
Right. Well, hey, appreciate the call. Were you just holding through the break, or I'm losing track of?
I
just take a little break, or
I was only holding for about 5-10 minutes, something like that.
But was there a commercial while you were holding?
No. I was listening to the other.
I'm going to take one more break, and we'll pick up for the last segment of the show. And Bob, hey, I really thanks. Appreciate your call. Keep listening to the show.
God bless. Bye bye.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Well, we're back. It's Peter Schiff, and we're back here. I'm taking your calls at Euro Pacific Capital. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. You know, I've had a frustrating day today. You know, I guess I could vent a little bit on the air, but it's a very good example of, you know, one of the reasons that we're not investing in the United States anymore. One of the reasons why this country is so doomed is all these rules and regulations that the government puts upon me. So, Euro Pacific Capital has a June fiscal year, and so this year is coming to a close here. And so I have to close my books, and I have to figure out how much of my profit I'm going to pay out to myself in salary and all this stuff. And, of course, all this is nonsense is how do I deal with, these regulations on tax. We shouldn't even have an income tax, but in any event. And then I have to deal with these net capital issues where I own a building and I bought it. I bought it through the corporation, which I shouldn't have done. And then the NASD, they changed these rules on me, and all of a sudden, you know, it just screwed me up. And I have to come up with all these clever accounting schemes to try to figure out how to account capital one way or not another way. And, you know, I'm just making money for my accountants and making money for my lawyers and just wasting my time to just comply with a whole host of government regulations that do nothing to help my clients, to protect my clients. It's absolutely nonsense. But here's one of the most ridiculous parts of it, you know, is that I got to pay myself a check tomorrow, and I've got to take the taxes out. Now, the rules now, it used to be as an employer, if you withheld taxes from your employees' paychecks, you had, like, up until the end of the quarter to make that federal tax deposit. Now, at some point, they changed that, and now you only have a week. However, if it's more than a certain amount of money, you got to do it that day. You don't even have it. The day you do it, you got to get it to the bank. You don't even have a week. So anyway, my paycheck, I only pay myself once a year. I pay myself at the end of the year. So obviously, this one check is large enough that I don't have the grace period. So I gotta, so I gotta do it all tomorrow. Well, I gotta wire the money into my checking account to pay for it because I don't have the money sitting there in my account to pay this huge tax bill. And so my bank, Wells Fargo, I said, look, I'm going to wire this money into you. You need to wire it out because I have to get to this payroll processing people by 11:30. Because if I don't get it there in the morning, I got to pay a big penalty because it's late. Well, Wells Fargo says, well, we can't help you because based on the Patriot Act, if you wire money in, we can't wire it back out the same day. We have to wait 24 hours. Now, here I have... The government is telling me that I got to make this payment by tomorrow. I'm going to have a big late penalty, but the bank won't send out my money because of another government regulation for the Patriot Act that says that they have to hold money for 24 hours before they wire it in. So they've got me in this cash situation 22, where the government creates a rule that prevents me from paying on time, and because I can't pay on time, I got to pay this huge penalty because my taxes are one day late. This whole thing is ridiculous. You know, this Patriot Act, the Patriot Act is so absolutely ridiculous. And all this work, you know, because of the Patriot Act, and maybe some of our clients don't know this yet, but we cannot accept a cashier's check or a money order that's made out in an amount that's less than $10,000. So if one of our clients, you know, opens up an account and puts in an order to buy $3,000 worth of stock, right, and they pay for it with a money order or a cashier's check, and they send that in, the clearing firm Pershing is going to turn around and send it right back. Say, sorry, we're not allowed to accept that. You need to replace it with a cashier's check for more than $10,000 or a personal check. Now, why do they do that? Well, it's the Patriot Act. And basically what they claim is that since terrorists might try to avoid the reporting, you see, if you go to a bank and buy a cashier's check for $10,000 or more, the bank has to file a form with the government to tell them that you bought it. But if you buy it for less than $10,000, they don't have to file that form. Therefore, Pershing assumes that anybody who buys a cashier's check for an amount less than $10,000 is trying to avoid the reporting requirement. And if you're trying to avoid the reporting requirement, you probably are a terrorist, or you could be a terrorist, so they won't accept the money. So what this whole stupid rule is, the government sets up a rule that says any transactions over $10,000 have to be reported. But now because of the Patriot Act, nobody will take a cashier's check for less than $10,000. So basically, what this new rule is it means that you're not allowed to buy a cashier's check for less than $10,000 because none of the financial institutions will accept them. I mean, this is so ridiculous, these rules and regulations. I mean, I can spend a whole hour, this whole program, talking about all the other ridiculous rules and regulations that we have to comply with because of the Patriot Act. And theoretically, this whole Patriot Act is supposed to prevent foreign terrorists, right, from sending their money to America and deposit it with American brokerage. Now, this shows you how stupid our government is. You see, because if we really wanted to get the terrorists, we would encourage them to send their money over here and put it into American brokerage accounts so they can lose it. I mean, the stupidest thing that terrorists could do is send their money to the United States and invest it over here. But no, we're passing laws making it discouraging terrorists from sending their money over here and therefore trying to get the terrorists to keep their money in Switzerland or someplace else where they might actually get a good return. See, if our goal is for the terrorists not to have money, send it into Merrill Lynch, send it into Morgan Stanley, let them churn it, let them put it in some, you know, ridiculous, dot-com stock, or let them put it in some one of our mutual funds. I mean, the best way to fight terrorism is to encourage the terrorists to send us their money so we can lose it for them and they don't have any of it. I mean, it shows you how ridiculous it is. But again, I mean, we're wasting so much money at Euro-Pacific Capital, money that could better be suited serving the interests of our clients, and instead we're spending it complying with rules and regulations and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, and the bottom line is, the public is getting screwed. Despite all these rules and regulations, the average brokerage firm is out there putting people into lousy investments. They don't understand what's going on. They're going to lose a bunch of money, even though all these rules are in effect. And what really protects my clients, what protects the clients at Euro-Pacific Capital, is not these government rules and regulations. What really protects my clients is my own integrity and my own desire in a free market to maintain a good reputation. I mean, if I had a reputation for losing people money, for making bad investments for my clients, I wouldn't get any referrals. I wouldn't keep my clients. The reason that I try to give out the best advice that I can is because the most important asset that Euro-Pacific Capital has is its reputation. Its reputation with its clients. And I wouldn't jeopardize that for anything. And so what protects my clients is the free market. It's capitalism. It's the value of goodwill, not trying to comply with some government regulation. I mean, what most of these government regulations do in the securities industry is protect the big brokerage firms from competition from little firms like me, because there's so many rules and regulations and things that you've got to do that it's very difficult for an entrepreneurial broker who doesn't buy into the nonsense of the mainstream to set up his own shop, because they make it so difficult with all the rules and all the regulations. I mean, it's mainly protectionism for the mainstream established firms that have their own legal departments and their own accounting departments that are so big that they can afford to pay all this money. You know, meanwhile, the public is getting screwed by these people. But anyway, that's just a little bit of my own venting. It's just been a frustrating day of complying with accounting rules and regulations and all that. And, you know, of course, if there's any NASD auditors listening to this program, we abide by all these rules. I mean, we do a good job. We dot all our I's and cross all our T's. And I might be complaining about them, but it doesn't mean I don't respect the fact that the rules and regulations are there, and we try our best to comply with them. But in any event, we're getting into the last 5 or 6 minutes of the program. You know, what do we've got coming up? You know, we've got the Fed is going to come out, I think it's tomorrow, with the FOMC. They're concluding their meeting, and they're going to raise interest rates by another 25 basis points. I mean, I'm sure that that's what they're going to do, and everybody expects them to do that, and that's what they're going to do. But the bottom line is, this is a farce. This is a scam. I mean, the Fed is pretending to be tightening monetary policy while they're printing money like it's going out of style. I mean, anybody thinks that the Fed is tightening is wrong. They're raising short-term interest rates, but they're expanding the money supply. They're putting money into circulation. We are pursuing an inflationary and expansionary monetary policy. And sure, we're raising short-term interest rates a quarter of a point at a measured pace, but inflation is getting worse. Inflation is rising faster. You know, and again, I saw another guest on CNBC, you know, and the guy actually was talking about rising inflation. And this is so ridiculous because he said, I think inflation, I'm not predicting high inflation. He said, I just think inflation is going to get a little worse, maybe about 4% this year or next year. Now, he said 4% isn't high inflation. 4% is a lot of inflation. Remember, 4% is the level where Nixon imposed wage and price controls in 1971. 4% inflation compounded year after year is a lot of inflation. This guest on there today said, I don't think we're going to have high inflation, just 4%. 4% is a lot of inflation. But you know what? It's actually going to be a lot worse than that. And you know the biggest irony of the whole thing, of course, we talk about how the government lies about inflation. They came out with their final revision today for first quarter GDP. And they revised the original. Originally, they told us, or the second one was, you know, they come out with three. They have the preliminary, the actual, and then the revised. So the government comes out and they tell us three times what the GDP was. And all three times, it's a meaningless statistic anyway. So, you know, they tell us three times, and they didn't need to tell us at all because the whole thing is a farce to begin with. But the fact that they do it three times is just, you know, adds insult to injury. But today, they came out with their final revision, and they moved it up from 3.5% to 3.8%. And the main reason that happened was because they revised down the GDP deflator from 2.4%, I think, to 2.2%. So according to the inflation measure used in the GNP, annualized inflation is running at 2.2%. I mean, what are they thinking? Does anybody really believe, anybody with a brain, really believe that over the last year prices are only up by 2.2%? 2.2%? Does anybody think that that inflation measure in the GDP is anywhere near what's going on? I mean, look what's happening to the cost of, you know, health insurance, to the cost of gasoline, to the cost of houses, to the cost of food, to the cost of metals and all kinds of other raw materials. Everybody is announcing price increases. Does anybody really believe that inflation is only 2.2%? But that's what they had to factor into the GDP to get the GDP to be 3.7. Because the lower they can make inflation, the higher that GNP number is, because it's reduced by what they claim inflation is. If inflation was really 5 or 6% instead of 2.2%, we'd be in a recession by their official numbers. The economy would actually be contracting. But what they're trying to do is to create the illusion of growth. What's really happening with the American economy is inflation. The reason that the economy appears to be bigger is because we're measuring the economy or the economic activity with dollars of diminished value. That's what's going on here. We're actually going broke while the government is trying to convince us that we're getting richer. And all of our economic activity is not focused on how much wealth we produce, but on how much wealth we consume, on how much wealth we dissipate. Because what do we do? What's our economy made up of? It's 90% consumer spending, or 80% consumer spending. That's what we're measuring. And what are we spending our money on? Are we spending it on the stuff that we produced ourselves? No. We're spending it on the stuff that was produced in other countries. And we're going into debt right now to the tune of $800 billion a year to have a consumption binge. I mean, is this insane? I mean, you know, there's a saying, you know, who the gods will destroy, they first make mad. And I think we're living through the maddening process right now because, I mean, obviously we're a nation gone mad if we think that we can spend our way to prosperity, that we can borrow our way to prosperity, and we can all live off the appreciated value of our residential real estate. You know, I just read a study that the typical person in California who's buying a home expects real estate prices to appreciate by 20% a year for the next 10 years. and that would put the median price of a house in California in 10 years at $3 million. That means the typical middle-class Californian who owns a home expects to make an average of $250,000 a year because he owns that home, which is probably three or four times what he makes working. I mean, this is insane what people think is going to happen to the value of their house. So this is going to end, I mean, very, very badly. And what we've got to make sure that we do is we get out of this before the music stops. And getting out of it is getting out of the dollar. Because believe me, the people who are going to lose the most when the housing bubble bursts are not the people who bought houses, but the people who lent them the money, either directly or indirectly, because they have savings in dollars, because they have pensions in dollars, because they have insurance, cash value of their insurance in dollars. And if you've got investments in dollars, your wealth is being dissipated right now because it's been recklessly lent to people to speculate in condominiums and things of that nature. So anyway, you got to give us a call. The toll-free number at Euro Pacific Capital is 800-727-7922. 800-727-7922. Go to my website, download my free research report on investing in foreign stocks at researchreport1.com, researchreport1.com, or go to www.europac.net, www.europac.net, and spend some time on our website and, you know, listen to the archived versions of the radio show. Anyway, it's been great fun. I'll be here again next Wednesday, same time, same place. Talk to you then. Have a great week.